sabrosura pa ti que.
Hello everyone, this is Pam, the Cafe con Pam, the bilingual podcast that features Latine and people of the global majority who break barriers, change lives, and make this world a better place. Welcome to episode 335 of Cafe con Pam. Today, we have a conversation with Maria Aguirre. Maria is a best-selling and international award-winning author, international speaker, and high-performance leadership coach. With a remarkable 28-year successful career in corporate leadership, particularly in aerospace operations, Maria now shares from stage her wisdom and insights, supporting aspiring leaders and fully embracing their role and purpose. In 2022, Maria established Meaningful Leaders with a Resolute Purpose to amplify her influence and impact by empowering others to discover meaning and fulfillment in their personal and professional lives. Maria equips others to consistently achieve peak performance and impact through self-leadership, effective team building, and communication that truly connects. Maria's unwavering conviction rests in leaders with the right tools to forge the right kind of connections with their teams, thereby transforming their roles into beacons of positive influence and drivers of high profitability. Listeners, my conversation with Maria was really interesting because we got to explore her life and how important it is for us to think about what we want to be when we grow up and then kind of like give ourselves the time to reflect back, because many times it's a full circle moment. I'm not going to spoil it, but in the case of Maria, she shares in the beginning what she wanted to do and how she ended up in a path that pretty much felt like full circle. So I don't want to talk more because I'm going to spoil it. But I think it's something that made me reflect and really explore my own inner child and how and what I was thinking when I was young and what I was saying when I was asked what I wanted to be when I grew up. Something to think about if you haven't in a while. And yeah, it was fun to reflect back on it after the episode. Pero bueno, I'm not going to embellish this intro anymore. Sin más, here's my conversation with Maria Aguirre. Hi, Maria. Welcome to Cafe con Pam. How are you?
Hi, I'm so excited to be here. Thank you for the invitation.
Yes, of course. So the first question that we always ask is, what is your heritage?
Born and raised in Ecuador in South America, but I've lived in Miami, Florida since 29 years. So I'm Floridian at heart.
You're officially a Floridian.
I think I've earned it. Yes, but I'm Ecuadorian. Yes.
And how did you get to the U.S.? What brought you?
I got an opportunity after college to come and work for repair station for aviation. And I took it. When I was a little girl, I wanted to be a pilot. But in Ecuador, you needed to be a male to be a pilot because you needed to join the Air Force. So there were a lot of issues that I encountered. So it was the second best thing to work in operations. So I took it and the rest is history.
Well, there's a lot of history.
Yes.
So we're going to like dissect it.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I have a lot of questions. How did you even get into wanting to be a pilot?
Well, I always like the proximity to the airport. Our house was behind the airport, the apartment where we live. And so we could see the takeoffs all the time. I'm an only child, so I was very good at imagining different things and, you know, entertaining myself so I don't drive adults crazy. So I would imagine these, you know, being the pilot and taking these people and all the places that I was going. It was very exciting. I saw it as a lot of freedom. I saw it as a very cool job to do. Like, you know, you just go and travel places. It's so cool. And you're driving the vehicle.
Did you travel or was it more because you were so close to the airport that you would just see the airplanes all the time? Was it super loud? I live in San Diego. I live by the airport and it's always super loud.
It was super loud. I traveled some and it was very fancy. So I always look at it like it was a different thing than driving a car, right? It was very cool. And you know, when you had to go from one place to the other driving, go visit family, it was like a lot of hours, but it was just half an hour on a plane. So it was very efficient, very cool. And yes, it was freaking loud. Like the windows will clatter every time I take off, took off. So it's something that you just couldn't ignore.
You got used to it, right?
You get used to it. Yes.
I know. I live by the airport in San Diego. And when people come visit or people, you know, they're there, they're like, they always get so impressed because I'm literally under the line.
Oh, wow.
The pathway of the airplanes. And so, yeah, you get the windows, like everything. It's like an earthquake every time. And I'm so used to it. I don't even hear the airplanes anymore. But the people that are new or they come visit or even like on phone calls. One time I was in a phone call and somebody was like, do you hear waves? I hear waves. And I'm like, no, these are airplanes like flying by.
Are you safe?
Right.
Yeah.
And I always see also people under, like by my window, they stop and they take pictures of the bellies of the planes. It's kind of funny. So back to your story. So you got this proximity to the airplanes. Did you tell your parents, like, one day I'm going to be a pilot? And did they like support it, or was it like a different?
I honestly don't think that I ever told anyone because they wanted me to be a doctor. My parents were doctors, so it was kind of like what was going to happen. And I was cool with that, but I was also going to be a pilot, right? Because when you're a kid, you can do 20 things.
Be both. Why not?
Right? It's not, there's no time constraints exactly. So I was like, sure, I'll be a doctor for you, but you know, this is what I want to do. So.
And so you go to college in Ecuador or here?
I went first to college in Ecuador and then I went to college here. So,
what's your undergrad in Ecuador?
Well, I study a career that is called commercial engineering. That's a translation. It's kind of like a business structure.
Is that civil?
No, it's more of the engineering of business, kind of like all the different components. So it's titled like that. Weird, I know. And I study business here.
That's not piloting or doctor.
I know. Things change. Nothing goes according to plan.
How did you get there?
It's kind of crazy because my mom passed away when I was 12. So, you know, everything shifted. Everything changed.
So it was just you and your dad?
No, I went to live with my aunt. My parents were divorced. So I went to live with my aunt in another city. And it was kind of like, you know, I needed to be on my own. And when you study medicine, you literally need somebody to support you, right? And do your laundry and your food, and you just need to study full time. It was very demanding. So I was like, what is something that I can do that was actually going to help me out and support me? And I thought, okay, something that related to business made sense, even though I thought it was something very icky, to be honest with you, because I always thought is a suit and tie kind of thing. And I was more of a dreamer, and that's not where I'm heading. And then I realized I had a knack for it. I was really good at it. So go figure. It wasn't in the plans, but it happened. Yes.
Okay. I have so many questions. So you live with your mom.
Yes.
And then when she passes, you go to your aunt's instead of your dad's.
Yes.
Is dad still in the picture?
Yeah, he lives in Ecuador, but he had remarried. He has his family, so.
So the best case for you was to go with aunt?
Yes.
With a tía?
Yeah, con la tía, los tíos.
Are they instilling any kind of like business in you? Like, I'm just so curious about how we went from like, I want to be a pilot, maybe a doctor, to like business.
I think it was more of eeny, meeny, miny, mo, kind of like, where do I go?
Okay.
There was no deep thoughts on Maria when she was 17. No, I wasn't. I was more of a, it looks cool. It looks like I can do it. Let me try it out. And it happened.
Okay. I mean, I support that. I mean, that's cool. You know.
Shoot from the hip. Why not?
Hey. I mean, sometimes that worked. I mean, it worked, clearly.
Yes.
But I'm also curious, when you're 12 years old, how did you process the grief of losing your mom? Did you have any support there?
I did. I have, my family was close by, particularly one of my uncles. He actually moved his family to my house, so I don't have to go somewhere else and be in a kind of alter my own environment and schedules and everything. And they were very supportive. A lot of it was also my faith. So just knowing that things happen for a reason, that God was in control, and that eventually I was going to see my mom again. It, I think, is what helped me. And I believe that every single thing that we go through is has a purpose, and it really develops something in us that is unique. Mm. And that can help us help other people at some point, right? We don't understand at the moment. I'm not telling you I was very wise at 12, but I had this piece of, okay, I'm going to see my mom again, and this has a purpose. This will have a reason.
Mm. Do you connect with her now?
All the time. All the time. I know she's always there. I know she's always, you know, guiding me, guarding me, and she's always present.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you for sharing that.
Of course.
Did she help with your decision-making on your career?
No, not really. I think she was probably like, oh my God, here we go. Yeah, no, not at all. I don't think that it was really anything. I think it was something that it was within me. Like when I was a child, my favorite game to play was Monopoly, and I had to be the bank, and I was borderline weird, like very organized, very, I was born a capitalist, I guess. I guess it was just a natural thing that to me made sense. And yeah, when I started my classes, I was like, oh, okay, I belong here.
So what happened to that little Maria who had this dream of being a pilot as you are in going to college and taking all these business classes? What happened to that younger you?
She was there. She was there, and it was always that having that expectation of what's going to be next, right? I've learned from very young age because of my mom passing and everything that planning doesn't really pan out the way you want it. So I try to live in the moment and also think, okay, the opportunities are going to be there when I'm ready, right? So I focus on preparing myself for things more than really chasing anything in particular. Right? Because I don't like to be disappointed either. So,
so like no expectations?
No. I was like, oh, let's see what happens. Right? And at that point, you know, being young and everything, it was more of a, I need to pay the bills, right? I have a rent to pay. I have to be responsible. But the dream was there. That's why when I had this opportunity working on a repair station for aftermarket aviation parts and moving here, I was like, oh, cool. And, you know, it helped that I had a degree. So I was like, you see?
So that's how you made it to Florida?
Yes.
How did you come across this opportunity?
Friends that had, you know, this idea that, hey, to mention it to other friends. And they were like, okay, she loves aviation. We have this connection. So boom.
I see.
Yeah, let's go.
And did you have a conversation with your tios?
I was on my own at that point, and I probably should have been a bit more responsible, just uprooting and disappearing.
So literally.
Yeah.
You did that.
Yes.
You packed your bags.
Yes.
Took the job, moved, didn't tell your family you were doing it.
Yeah. Well, I had gotten married when I was 18 years old.
Okay.
At that time I was married. A year later, I had my son. So it was my ex-husband, my son, and I. And people knew around us, I'm assuming. I'll check after this Did you know that I was leaving? But yeah, we, you know, packed everything and we had the opportunity. And it was one of those things that, okay, but you need to be here in 2 weeks. It's like, okay, I have a fridge to sell and a couple of things and let's go.
How old was your son?
A little bit younger than a year old.
Oh, so he hadn't been in school. You know, I was like...
He has no recollection. Yeah.
So you moved to Florida... It's kind of like a full circle moment, no?
Yeah.
Because you get back into the aviation field.
Yes.
And so what was the role there?
It was a small company, so it was like a little bit of everything. It was handling quotes for repairs, but I've always been very curious. So I would go to the shop and ask the technicians to teach me, you know, how do you fix it? How do you repair the things? And, you know, how do you know this is when you're troubleshooting a unit? How do you know that this is the cause? And they will teach me. They actually appreciated the fact that I was very interested in learning. And it helped me because I was able to, when I was giving quotes to my customer, explain to them, okay, the cost is based on this and, you know, and there's no interchangeability on parts and different things, right? That they needed to understand to justify what we were charging for the repair. So it really helped. And I fell in love completely head over heels with the operation side of things. I love fixing something, like something getting fixed and then being operating again. I'm such a nerd. I'm sorry.
So you were basically kind of like in like client relations in a way?
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of liaison between the repair technicians and the customer. So I would always say I am the customer in the shop, right? I'm representing the customer in the shop. I always took that perspective, right? The customer can't be here. So I need to make sure that, yes, of course, we're making money, but we're also taking care of them. Some of these were airlines, and it's very, their maintenance schedule is very strict. There's, you know, when they ground a plane, it's very expensive for them. So yeah, it's kind of keeping that in mind. And so I started learning a lot about the shop and the technical aspect of things to do my job.
Do you pilot now?
No.
Did you ever like think of like, I'm going to take some pilot classes because why not?
I thought about it. Maybe one of these days. I'll let you know. I'll share you an email.
Let me know when you do.
Yes.
How old are you at this point?
Well, I was 20, about to be 21.
Okay. How was it for you to handle like such maybe like contracts, conversations? I mean, I'm assuming this is not like, you know, a $40 repair.
Yeah.
You know?
No.
So how was it for you to start handling these numbers?
I don't know. I had equipped myself with the knowledge of things. So I was very confident, actually. And that's when I think I realized, you know, oh, you know, I'm really good at this. Like, it really works for me. And I feel comfortable, right? Had it happened to you that sometimes you're like, oh, you know, I really don't belong here. I'm really not. No, I was in my element. At that point, I was completely in my element and I was really good at it. And I worked my schedule in a way that I was like, you know, if there was an emergency at night and I needed to be on call, I would make it happen because, you know, I really enjoyed it.
What about English? I mean, if it's Florida, it's like you don't need English. But, you know, I'm assuming like dealing with clients and repairs and parts, learning the parts in English, like how was the transition of the language?
It was challenging. When I first moved, I completely cut off watching TV in Spanish, reading in Spanish, everything. I put everything in English and I had closed captions on the TV so I could like visually relay the writing with
sound.
Exactly. And it was a struggle because, yeah, some of my customers were in Latin America, so I was able to handle it. But some others were in the US or even Europe, and I had to, you know, learn as I went. I guess when you're younger, it's easier.
Yeah.
I learned on the go. And actually, I learned aviation, and I also learned leadership in English. It's funny. The other day, I was having a conversation with a friend of mine. She has a podcast, and she wanted me in the podcast to talk about leadership, the work that I do today. And I was like, that's in Spanish. I will have to think double because I learned all these things in English. I don't know.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's weird. And I'm fluent in Spanish, but certain words related to work, I have to really think about them before I say them.
En español.
En español. Or do Spanglish and mix them up and people look at me like, what? Yeah.
Yeah. I concur. I support that thought process because somebody once told me that English is the language of business.
It is.
I don't remember where I learned this, but it made so much sense because for bilingual people, non-English, like English as a second language speakers, anyone who doesn't speak English as a first language must do business in English because your original or like your mother tongue, your main language, your first language is the one that you feel with.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense.
Right? And so Spanish speakers, like you and I are like first language is Spanish, right? And so allegedly, we feel more in Espanol. And so if we were to do business in Spanish, there's more emotion attached to it because it's how we first learn to speak and share, you know, our feelings and et cetera, et cetera. Whereas in English, there's this separation between emotions and, you know, action.
Okay.
Fascinating, right?
Makes sense.
And so even for me, like that's why I'm like, I agree with what you're saying, because when I need to do business, even talking to my team, like people in the Café con Pam team, everyone speaks Espanol. Like we all, the first language is Espanol. And sometimes I have to switch if we're talking like more business stuff. I have to switch to English because otherwise I get caught up into the emotions of everything. And so English makes me much more pragmatic.
Effective. Mm-hmm. Yeah. 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 Makes total sense. Huh.
Makes sense why, you know, leadership's in English.
Yes. Yes, definitely. Definitely.
So let's take a quick coffee break and let's come back and talk about what you do now. Sabrosura pati que que. Okay, Maria, do you drink coffee?
A lot. Okay. I'm a coffee snob.
Ooh, tell me more.
I used to say coffee lover, but no, I'm a snob. Like,
yeah.
You know when you drink coffee in the hotel room because it's convenient?
Or you skip it because it's gross?
Exactly. It's like, I'll deal with the migraine before drinking that. Yeah. When you make that decision, you become a snob. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes.
How do you drink your coffee?
Black.
Okay. Do you brew it every morning?
Yes. French press.
Okay.
10 minutes brewing. It's very mathematical. Yes.
I mean, this is an engineer.
Yes. There's a process behind.
Yes. French press drinkers are special. French press coffee is deep.
It is. It is. It's like when the first sip of coffee touches your soul and then you're back in the world of the living.
And then you wake up.
And you're like, okay, I can handle it. Maybe. Boring it.
Yeah. French press it's a very specific drinker. I think French press drinkers and espresso drinkers, they're like pretty similar in that lens. I am a pour over drinker, which is a much lighter form of brewing coffee. Do you like pour overs?
Yeah.
But you're a French presser.
I'm a French presser. And you know, the first, I had gotten a French press as a present. And I had to use it because of a hurricane. We had no electricity. And I was like, oh my God, what are we going to do? I was like, oh, there's that thing that I don't know how to use.
How did you warm up the water? Probably fire.
Probably. I think it was in the barbecue. And my husband was like, okay, if I don't give coffee to this woman, she's going to go crazy. I got the water. I knew that I was reading instructions because I was like, I do not know how this device works. And then I, you know, worked through it and I was like, oh, I have discovered my way in life now. Mm. And yeah, never looked back.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And it is, it's very, like you said, the 10 minutes. So French press, just like I would say a pour over, there's an art to it. You know, it's not like your typical drip that you can just like scoop it, put the water in. No, there's a process, which I think for the non-coffee drinkers, even tea is something that it's very ritualistic and grounding, you know, even from the moment you ground. Do you grind your beans every time?
Some of them, not all of them. Some of them I just have them pre-ground because, I eventually need to work.
I know. I understand.
Otherwise, it will be half my morning.
Yeah. I get it.
Yeah.
What's your favorite region of coffee? Ecuadorian coffee is good.
Ecuadorian coffee is good. Colombian coffee is good. Mm-hmm. Ethiopian coffee is really good.
I love Ethiopian coffee.
Ethiopian is, I would say is right there because it has a kick. Really, it's good. Yeah.
One of my favorite types of grains are Ethiopian because of the wash.
Yeah.
And it's like a whole thing. So I'm happy to have this nerding conversation.
I love it. I don't think we talk enough about coffee in life.
I agree. Right now I'm working on doing actual coffee shop visits where I visit coffee shops and I record at the coffee shop. I have partnered up with a company that created a sound capsule specifically for mobile recording. And so I'm excited to try it at actual coffee shops because that was the origin of Café con Pam. For me to have these conversations over cafecito at a coffee shop, but I don't have the tech. But you know, 7 years later, here we are. This is awesome. Why, like, I tell people, just get started. Like, even if you can't make it happen how you want to, just make it happen how you can.
Definitely.
You're still in Florida, yeah?
Yes, I'm in Florida.
Do you like cubanos?
I like café cubano, but I drink it without sugar. So I kind of defeat the purpose of café cubano because it's dessert, right? It's el postre y el café junto. There's one that I like is Pasión del Cielo, but again, I'm a snob, so not always they prepare coffee like I like it. So, yeah.
I know. We had Rick on the show, Cuban in Florida, and he explained to me how the Cubano is actually not meant to be drank alone.
No.
And that's why you get the cup, and then you get the little cups.
The colada.
To share with people.
Yes. You know? But funny story on that. So when I first moved here, nobody explained the
nobody
process.
Nobody does.
Nobody does, right? So I was drinking two coladas, the whole thing, a day, because I didn't know. It was delicious. It was full of sugar.
Down.
Exactly. And I was like, I'm hyper by nature, if you haven't realized by now. So I was like, foom, 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 foom. And then, of course, when you speak Spanish, you speak very fast. We tend to speak super fast. And one time my boss was like, Maria, come here. And I was like, what happened? He's like, enough. You need to quit that coffee addiction of yours. I can't understand a word you're saying. I'm like, oh, I don't know what you mean.
You get a 2X. You know, like 2X. I know.
So then they explained that the little cups are not for you to leave behind, but for sharing. It's like,
I know.
You cannot drink one in the morning, one in the afternoon, and you know, live until old age.
It's like one tiny cup.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's yes. That happened to me in Miami, and I didn't know until I knew, and then, you know, lesson learned.
There you go.
All right, let's get back to the show. Hola, Vanis. By the way, if you are enjoying this conversation and you want to keep talking about it, if you have some comments and maybe some questions that you have, follow me on social media and let's keep that conversation going. This is your reminder to screenshot and tag me at Café con Pan Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And let's keep talking about it. Tell me what's resonating. Tell me what isn't. Tell me what do you wish I asked the guest. This is your chance. And if you're on TikTok, I'm at Café con Pan Pod as well. Let's stay connected. Okay, so you're in Florida. You're a mom. You are like climbing the ladder, learning leadership, speaking English. When do you burn out?
So many stories about that. I think that I like being very busy, doing very many things because it keeps me out of trouble. But it's good. I think I function better when I have a lot going on. So I'm doing this thing. I'm still working in aviation, growing my family. By that time, 96, my daughter was born. So now I have two kids. So busy life. English was down pat by then. I was like, handling it. So no, really good. Loving having a team, learning from them, because you know, there's one thing what you learn in school and a completely different thing what the real deal is. So yeah, pretty cool.
So you're managing people at this point?
Yeah, at some point I had a small team that's started growing. So I started delving into the leadership side of things.
What was your first lesson on leadership?
I am not meant to know everything. It's okay not to know, but it humbled me. It really humbled me.
Tell me what happened.
It wasn't a one thing. It was of, I'm a perfectionist in recovery. I suffer from perfectionism for a long time. And I thought that everybody expected me to do everything because, you know, you get the job and then you're good at it. So there's a lot of expectations, self-imposed, a lot of them. And, you know, operations in aviation, male-dominated industry. So I needed to do this right, and put a lot of pressure on myself with my team and really thinking, you know, if I'm going to be their leader, if I'm managing this team, I need to know every aspect of it, right? And I made a few mistakes because I made decisions not knowing all the facts and not asking the right questions, not being humble enough to say, hey, I have no clue. Please explain it to me. And I also saw different things around me with other leaders that was happening the same thing. So it was an eye-opening. And that I think that that's one of the coolest lessons that I've learned that really changed how I saw leadership.
Did you have a conversation with the team after? How did you, I don't want to say recover because I don't know, but how did you get yourself back from it?
Yeah, I actually apologize. Mm. I said, you know what? I should have talked to you guys and ask, and I didn't. And I'm sorry. And they actually told me, you're putting too much weight on yourself. We're here to help.
Stop trying to do everything.
Exactly. And from that day on, I partnered up with them and I partnered up with every single team I had since. And it was a game changer.
So what would you say to people on the other side, maybe dealing with a difficult or a leader who's a perfectionist? Did you micromanage?
I don't think that I've ever micromanaged too much because I hate it. I hate it when I was micromanaged. So don't do unto others kind of thing. But I did took a lot on my own because I didn't think that anybody could do it as good as I did. So I didn't fully trust my team. That was on me because I wasn't equipping them, right? And that leads to burnout, hands down. Yes, every time.
So how could an employee support a boss like that? Or is it more like self-responsibility? They need to realize they need to take action.
Ideally, every leader should have self-awareness, right? But it's like
not
common sense.
Does.
Exactly. It's like common sense. You can bottle it.
Yes.
I believe firmly that iron sharpens iron, right? And a lot of people are afraid to talk to their managers, their leaders, and saying, hey, I need to give you feedback, right? But I think if you really care for the person, it's the courageous thing to do. And if you are not talking to the person, you're doing them a disservice, right? So, of course, it's always finding the right moment because you don't want to embarrass them. You don't want to, because it can backfire and they can go on a completely horrible power trip, right? Who the hell are you to tell me?
Yes.
But I think that every leader receives feedback well if it's given in a sense of, hey, I care about you and I'm seeing these and I'm here for you.
I love that. I went to a networking event and I had a conversation with someone. And you know, when you're networking, you're not going to be like giving advice. So it's just like, ooh, wish you the best. But this person, woman of color, she recently got assigned a new manager whom she had worked before, but not directly, kind of like dotted, lined. And now she's directly under her and like employee has tried, like they've had 4 meetings scheduled and manager cancels like 5 minutes before, an hour before without explanation. And then when employee follows up, like, hey, I had some things in the agenda, manager's like, I have other priorities. So sorry, I had to cancel. Let's, you know, meet next month. And then next month gets canceled and so on and so forth. And so in that case, there's not even space for a conversation. Mm. What would you tell that person?
In that sense, I would recommend that they document things because it can backfire to them. And, you know, we are all, each one of us called to protect ourselves, right? And the business environment can be brutal. So I will document and maybe send, hey, there's been repeated attempts, and send an email. That you can have a written form of proof. Hey, it's been repeated attempts on these days, these days, these days. These are topics I need to discuss with you. We need to meet. And if there's no reaction after that, then I will involve human resources.
I see.
Yeah.
You just get straight to it, huh?
Because unfortunately, it's, and I've seen it a lot, people don't like to have hard conversations. Mm-hmm. You avoid them. But I think it's part of the growth as a leader. And not because this other person reports to the leader means that they're not a leader. I think that every single one of us serves as a role model for somebody, right? And one of the things that I always say teams and leaders when I talk to them is that the culture of an organization is determined by the behavior that the leadership is willing to tolerate, including their own. And so if you're not there to listen to me, you're not leading me. You're not my leader. So we need to talk because you're not carrying your weight.
That's a lot of self-awareness.
Oh, yeah. And some people don't understand what the impact they're having, right? So sometimes that wake-up call is required for them to, oh, shoot, I need to step up and I need to do my job better or move aside.
One of the hardest lessons in leadership when I had a team, a bigger team, was firing someone.
Yeah.
That was hard.
It is.
And I remember going to my boss at the time and I was like, I can't do this because this employee, like, it was one of those, like, I was literally thrown into the fire and like a relentless, like, not even like almost in a very uncompassionate way, because this person was known for being aggressive.
Oh, wow.
Like, he had already walked out on his own team, and he had already, like, thrown fits and yelled and stuff. So I was like, I don't know if I feel, like, one, I don't know if I feel safe doing this. I don't know if I'm equipped. Like, that was my first time ever firing someone. And my boss at the time, he was like, you got it. I know you got it. Just go sit down and say what you need to say and get up. And I was like, and I mean, I did it, but, and thankfully he didn't react. That was my biggest fear. I didn't want him to, you know, get an anger, like, challenge there and, like, take it on me. He didn't, which was good. He just literally got up and walked out, but that was hard.
It is. It is one of the hardest things on the job. Yeah.
Yeah. Going back to the difficult conversations, probably one of the most difficult.
Probably the most difficult one, yes. Yeah, but if you're doing it the right way, you know, it gives you at least that peace of mind that, okay, I did everything I could. Mm-hmm. And I did it with compassion, you know. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Agreed. Okay, so back to your story. So you're in Florida, you are climbing the ladder, you go back to school.
Yes.
How many degrees do we have?
Three. I did a 2-year undergrad because they convalidated some of my classes.
That's good.
So I did, but I wanted to do a master's, but I've never studied English fully. So I did an undergrad. And then after graduating, I was like, okay, I'm done. And I did a couple of certifications, and then I still had the bug for the master's. So I went and I did an MBA in aviation. In aviation from Embry-Riddle, which is an aeronautical school. I specialized in finance because I thought it was a great idea at the moment. And I suffer throughout every single one of my classes. But I prevailed, graduated.
Yay, you did it.
Yes, and actually on my graduation ceremony from my master's, my first granddaughter was there. She was a baby, but she was there. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
There's so much there.
I know.
When do you first realize you're burnt out, and what do you do?
Perfectionism. I'm burning out. I'm trying to do all the things, be all the things. And I realized that, kind of like in Runaway Bride. Did you ever watch The Runaway Bride with Julia Roberts?
No.
Okay. Never mind. Well, at some point, she tries to like every man she's dating that she's going to get married to. So she forgets how she eats her ex.
Wow.
She will ask for her ex the same way that
they do.
Exactly. So kind of like similar, you start to forget who you are, right? And that started to happen to me. I was trying to be all things for everybody. And then I was like, who the heck am I? What do I want, right? And what is that I like? Because I had become a people pleaser. I wanted to be liked. Mm. And I was losing myself in there. And that was a huge wake-up call. Yeah, I was exhausted. I was like, I didn't like myself at all. I was like, ugh. You're on edge all the time. You're tired all the time. You're trying to do all the things all the time.
What's the first thing you do? Who do you call?
I think I slept for like 20 hours straight. And then probably cry a lot until I kind of purge everything. And then, I don't know, I had conversations with a few friends that were close, like sharing all these that I'm feeling. And it's like, how can one person feel so many things, right? Kind of like started to point out what I was feeling, but a lot of journaling. Mm. My tool is journaling. Whenever something is bugging me, I have to write about it. It's funny how it starts to look differently when it's outside of you and in the paper.
Makes a big difference, huh?
Huge, huge. Okay. I'm a big believer of journaling. Huge, huge believer. Yeah.
I love that. So fast forward to today, what do you do?
So I founded Meaningful Leaders in 2022.
Pandemic business,
yes. And it started because I wrote my book, my first book, but I wanted to actually create a course, kind of like a guide for leaders, because during the pandemic, I saw a lot of issues popping up that we didn't notice before, right? My team at the time was running smooth. Everything was fine. We were essential because aviation was essential. So we all worked throughout on site. We were together, 45 humans during the pandemic, trying to stay 6 feet away from each other.
Wow.
In Miami, where everybody hugs. So
yeah,
the togetherness was prohibited. But we were fine. And everybody was fine. And, you know, I had to have these conversations with the team in which, you know, I had to guide them through what was going on and how we needed to work. Everybody was afraid. I'm very good at hurricanes. I know what to do. Exactly. Pandemic, it was my first one. I had no idea what I was doing. So a lot of the conversations were, hey, I have no idea. We're figuring this out together. Give me some grace because I am in the same boat as you, right? Mm-hmm. And they responded. They took a leap of faith, but I saw their teams around me failing miserably because the moment a crisis hit, everybody was like, whoa, you know, where's our leadership? And so I started doing that, and that's where Meaningful Leaders was born, with that idea. And I was like, okay, I'm going to write a book, put it out there, and my job is done, right? Somebody will read it, and they'll figure it out. And it happened that as the book was published, a lot of people started like, okay, you need to speak to our team on this, or you need to create a workshop for our team on this, and we would love to have you during this, you know, seminar that we're having in our company to talk about your experience, because it was written from boots on the ground. Like, you know, I've messed up. I've done this. I've done that. And this is how I manage it. And this is what worked.
I love that. Because it's almost like you decided to write the book. And then it was like people started coming from the lessons that they were getting. Tell us all the places and spaces where people can find you.
Well, my website is meaningfulleaders.com, Instagram at meaningfulleaders. I'm on LinkedIn under my name. That's normally where I hang out, those three places. And I think that, you know, the coolest thing I can do for leaders is always keeping up the lessons that I learn for them, not only what I wrote in the book. So I have a blog. I publish an article every Tuesday, so they can find it on my website. It's meaningfulleaders.com/the blog.
Awesome. And what are some aviation lessons that you've learned that can be applied to leadership?
One of my favorite ones is both in leadership and in aviation and in life, we never cut corners, right? And in life, we know that, you know, there's certain things that we need to go through, and there's certain growing pains that we have to endure in order to reach that growth. In leadership is the same thing. And what I've learned in my industry is, you know, in quality. Quality is one of the most important things. Quality and safety are the pillars of aviation. And in aviation, if you cut a corner, it can represent that we have a failure on an aircraft and we can lose hundreds of lives. So we never cut corners, right? And so in my leadership, I've always made very clear that my team understands we never cut corners. That's one of our core values. And we go through the process. We try to optimize as much as possible, but processes are there for a reason, right?
I love that. Okay. So are you down for some rapid fires?
Sure.
What's the biggest success you're still celebrating?
My kids came out okay.
That's a good one. That's a good one. What's a lesson you are still learning?
How to rely on each other. On other people.
What is something you've been putting off for months?
A book that I started writing, and I'm not consistent at it.
Okay. Vicks or té de manzanilla?
Depends on what I'm feeling. Manzanilla.
What is love?
God.
Joy or peace?
I think they're close together. They're intertwined.
Discipline or habits?
Discipline.
What is stopping you?
Self-doubt sometimes.
How are you getting over it?
Doing the things that I don't want to do.
What's your message on a napkin? If I gave you a napkin and I said you have one chance to leave a message on it, and this comes from the Citibank logo, was Paula Scher, a designer. She came up with the logo on a napkin. And so if you can put a message on a napkin, what would it be?
Always lead with a heart for people.
Mm. What's the future?
Bright. It's beautiful.
Awesome. And the last few questions. One, what's your remedio?
Te de anís estrellado. when you have a stomach ache.
Tell me more.
That's from my great grandma. Especially when, you know, the babies were crying, they were, you know, like gassy or stuff like that, they will give them anise estrellado. So if you have a stomach ache, and it has to be the anise estrellado. So you put the water, boiling water, and you put it there, let it rest, sip a little bit, and then you start drinking it. Mm. It works.
How many pieces of it?
Probably like dos estrellitas. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And anise, ¿cómo se dice anise en inglés?
Anise, I think.
Anise también?
Yeah.
All right. So it's the full...
I had to Google that one time. Yeah. You guys. It's anise. Probably it's pronounced differently, but probably. We're going to go with anise.
I mean...
Exactly.
People will figure it out. Do you have a quote or mantra that you live by?
No, I don't think so. I'll work on it.
I don't know. Maybe do you tell yourself something when you wake up in the morning? Do you have a morning ritual?
I do a little prayer and then I get up and try not to fall down the stairs while I reach my coffee. So I'm not big on evening rituals or morning rituals. Yeah. No, okay. I don't have a mantra.
All right. That works. And do you have a productivity tip, trick, or tool that you want to share with us?
I try to hyper-focus on what I need to get accomplished. So I write it down because I love the satisfaction of scratching something out of a post-it note. So I really have to, because I try to do many things at the same time and it never works out. So I really write down 3 things that I want to do and focus on completing that before I do anything else. Like you cannot even get a cup of coffee until we finish that. So hurry up.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know if it's true, but I have it on my 5-day challenge. It's called the 25-5 Buffett list. I'm sure you've heard of it, where Warren Buffett, according to the theory, it's a similar thing. It's a top five things for the day, can't move on. So you write your 25 list or whatever, however long, but you start with the 5 most important and then don't move from them unless you've completed. And it's a highly effective way of prioritizing.
Yeah.
Because it keeps you focused.
Yeah. And one thing that helps is I avoid looking at my emails before completing my tasks. Because when you open your emails, it's a Pandora's box. You never know what you're going to find. And it can literally derail you from, you know, I saw this and this is what I'm going to work on to what life throws at you. So unless you finish this, you cannot even look at your email. You know, if there's an emergency, somebody will call you.
Totally.
You know, if the building's on fire, somebody will reach out. Yes. So complete the task. Don't make excuses and earn that cup of coffee before you get up there. Yeah. Mm,
I love that. Yeah. The average person reads email every 2.5 hours. Did you know that? It's wild.
Wow. Yeah.
I know.
It can be addictive because you want to make sure that you answer or, you know, it takes a life of its own.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great way to procrastinate, you know, check email.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. I'm inefficient. No, you're not.
Right. I'm checking email. What is that doing? Nothing. Yeah. Maria, thank you so much for coming to Café con Pam. This was fun. I enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you, Pam. Thank you for having me.
Yes, of course.
Stay shining. You're awesome.
All right, listeners, that was my conversation with Maria Aguirre. I really enjoyed exploring the various intricacies of her life and how, now that you've listened to it, how she wanted to be a pilot, and somewhere, somehow, life kept taking her into the aerospace world. And it's really cool to witness, to be able to see it from afar, from a distance, and say, oh, that's cool that when you were young, you lived by the airport, you wanted to be a pilot. And then while maybe she didn't quite make it to become a pilot, she still made it to the industry, which is related to what she wanted to be when she grew up. Pretty cool, I think. If this is your first time here, welcome to Café con Pam. I hope you feel at home. Espero que te sientas en tu casita con confianza. And I hope you stay. Follow, subscribe, rate, review, all the things on the show because it does support the show. I know there's various people that say it doesn't matter, but it does. Because people like you that are new, that are wondering, what is this show about? They read the reviews and they really get to connect with what other people say.
So if you have the time, if you feel called, I so appreciate you dropping your stars and leaving the reviews. Also, make sure to follow Café con Pam on Apple Podcast, on Spotify. Those are the two most popular ones. And if you have other streaming platform, please be my guest and make sure you subscribe to the show that way, because again, it counts. It counts. Also, if you're curious, you can download the Latino Podcasters Network app and explore and learn about other awesome podcasts like this one. Listeners, thank you so much for being here. I would love to stay connected. Feel free to tag me and screenshot and tag me on the episode at Café con Pam Podcast. I would love to learn your thoughts and how you resonated with this episode. I'm mainly on the Instagram. I've been in a hiatus kind of recently because I'm in freeze mode, but I'm getting out of it. Yeah, I hope you are taking care of yourself. I hope the collective grief we are feeling, I hope the tenderness in your hearts, I hope the witnessing that we are experiencing is something that we can feel and at the same time channel into action, because I mean, it's real, it's happening, it's undeniable, and it hurts. And so if you are feeling a lot, if you've been touched by the atrocities and the pain that's happening in the world, then I send you love and healing and at the same time space for you to feel and process, because it's real and it's important for us to continue to process this and continue to witness what we are experiencing. It's not something that can be ignored. And thank you for being here. Y bueno, listeners, if you want to stay connected, check out our page, cafecompam.com. That's where all the things are inside. The Manispas is currently being, enrollment is open. And also, I'm having a birthday sale. So ever since the beginning of my business, I have committed to giving back. And sometimes I've not been able to because I need to make sure that I am resourced. And so this is where I personally believe we get the choice as business owners to decide, well, am I going to take a percentage of my profits and give them to an organization that's giving humanitarian help or making the world a better place in some way? Or am I going, in my case, this is how I have made decisions in the past when it comes to my giving. I'm either going to price my things in a way where I get overflow to give back, or I offer equitable prices that allow most or more people to access my programs. I have played with both, and right now I'm doing a birthday sale and I'm offering equitable prices. And in this case, those of you who can give more, the profits for that will go towards humanitarian aid. Those of you, and I want to keep it transparent because I can make claims to say, well, 10% of the profits will go too, because not every 10%. If you're able to pay for a lower price point, that's the bare minimum that I need to make to resource myself and to live. And so a portion of those profits will my way of giving back to you and at the same time resourcing myself. Those of you who can give the other price points that are higher, those give us room for access to give back then to humanitarian aid. I share this because I think it's important to have transparency in business and to say, and this is why I don't have the claim in the cards, because it would be a false claim. And that's important for me to not lie to you. But I wanted to give that clarity here in case you're still here and explain my thought process. It may or may not align to you. It's something that I have had to sit with because I have thought of the many ways and done the many ways of sending the faxes and picking up the phone and sending the text and calling and sending the letters and giving back in money, giving back in time. And so this is at the moment where I exist, and this is the truth that I live with right now. Maybe at a later time, I'm going to say, you know what? I cannot any longer offer equitable pricing. We're just going to offer regular price that brings in profits and overflow so that then I can fully commit to giving back. You know, it's one of those things that I think, one, important to be transparent, and two, important to give ourselves the space to play with that because we create the rules. I also feel the need to share this in case you are also a small business owner and you've been kind of like
felt pressure in some way to show up in a specific way. And this is a reminder that everyone shows up with the possibilities that they can afford. And to not deny the pain and the suffering that's happening. And at the same time, it's a truth that we currently live with. And so I also need to sit with that, you know? And I would love to be in conversation about this. It's been a lot, listeners. Thank you for being here. Thank you so, so much for hanging out. Thank you for the last 7 years. I've not done an anniversary episode because it's been a lot. And so I hope this birthday sale is supportive to you. And I hope you're able to get resourced in some way, because it is when we can find understanding. Sometimes we're not going to get to a place of resourcefulness. We're going to be like barely there and still in a place to give, because that's the truth that we live in. So I also want to honor and acknowledge that. I've been in those moments where I'm like, look, there's kids in cages. What do I need to do? And right now there's thousands of children dying. What do we need to do? And so I've been doing a lot of inner exploration, lots and lots of reading, lots of learning, lots of going back in history and really educating myself so I can understand better what's happening. Pero bueno, thank you so much for being here. Como siempre, stay shining.